This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Delighted to be here once again with our nutritionist in residence, who is Layla Mudin. Layla's got an RD, and she's also the proud possessor of a master's degree in the field of nutrition, and we answer questions together every week here on our weekly Q&A with Layla. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you, and looking forward to fielding questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. We've got a bunch of questions in the mailbag, but boy, do we have exciting news this week before we get to questions, because the venerable scientific journal, Journal of the American Medical Association, sometimes referred to as JAMA, had a big article this week, and the entire integrative medicine community is abuzz with it. It's entitled Association of the Functional Medicine Model of Care with Patient-Reported Health-Related Quality of Life Outcomes. That's a mouthful. And what they're saying here, basically, is that functional medicine makes patients happier and more likely to improve their health outcomes.
Great.
It's based on a very interesting project which some people I know are involved with. The prominent spokesperson for integrative medicine is involved with this project at Cleveland Clinic. They managed to convince the Cleveland Clinic to do a pilot program with functional medicine as part of their outpatient program. And so it's amazing that this got off the ground. It's taken so long. You know, we've been involved in practice of integrative medicine for near on four decades. Here with my practice, the Hoffman Center, you've been part of that model for the last 15 years or so. Finally, they're doing it in the belly of the beast in the prestigious Cleveland Clinic. So they set up a clinic, and what they did is they compared 7,252 patients treated in a functional medicine setting, and they matched them to patients in ordinary primary care. And what they found is that there was a positive change in something called global physical health at 6 months, and higher scores indicated better health-related quality of life.
Wow.
So functional medicine patients showed improvement, and you know, what they're saying here is that basically it's a vindication for functional medicine, which is kind of what we practice. What's functional medicine? It means looking at all systems. They say chronic disease is challenging health in the United States, nearly 100 million people having one or more chronic conditions in 2014. They've been poorly served. They say without new approaches that focus on reversing chronic disease, our current healthcare model will become economically unsustainable, something we've been saying for a long time. Nutrition and lifestyle choices can be used to manage chronic disease. Okay, so what's the difference between this and ordinary primary care? Well, at the, just like here in our practice, every patient has to see the nutritionist from the first visit and every subsequent visit. Also, they're given a health coach, which is a way of extending the doctor advice, because often doctors are busy and they're you know, putting out fires. And so for ordinary advice about lifestyle, they've incorporated health coaches who are trained individuals. They aren't you know, that expensive to hire because they don't have, you know, lots and lots of letters after their names, but they're well-trained
yes.
to administer basic lifestyle suggestions about diet, sleep, exercise, and so on. Mm-hmm. So that model is resoundingly successful.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's really a reflection of the fact of the kind of medicine and nutrition we've been practicing here. All functional and integrative nutrition. Used to be called what in the beginning?
Holistic.
Alternative?
Holistic. Right. Alternative, right.
Alternative, and right. then it was complementary, and then integrative. And basically integrative
and now we call it
was
functional.
What's on my card. Now yeah. it's functional.
Right.
So it's we're really talking about the same thing here.
They say,
and there's nothing woo about this. It works. There's better quality of care. There are better outcomes. We see this firsthand. We see this amongst our own patients. And we get so many patients who have been through the mill of not getting a satisfactory outcome in mainstream medicine. And that's why they come to see us.
Now, I remember I was perseverating earlier. It's Mark Hyman who's very much involved
yes.
in this initiative. He's a guy who's been a real advocate and spokesperson for integrative medicine and functional medicine. Mm-hmm. And so that's been his... one of his main initiatives is to get this off the ground and to develop a model for mm-hmm. care. So I like some of the language they use here in the discussion. So if you'll permit me, this is from the Journal of the American Medical Association article. They say, moreover, many chronic diseases are not diseases per se. I say to patients sometimes, you know, you're auditioning for for the part, but you haven't got it yet.
Yeah.
You know, the disease hasn't emerged. Nobody knows what's wrong with me, Dr. Hoffman. I said, okay, well, let's, you know, why are you fatigued? Why are you experiencing digestive problems, malaise,
yeah.
you know, skin problems? You don't feel right, you know, lack of get up and go. And, well, you know, until you really have a disease, they sort of, you know, it's like a fisherman who catches a fish that's under the size limit. You know, you get the ruler out and you say, oh, you know, little fishy, we can't collect you. We'll throw you back in the water and you can swim around for another season or two. And, you know, when you're over the limit, we'll, you know, we'll hook you and bring you on board. And, you know, mm-hmm. then you actually have, you've.
And call it a caught fish.
Right. And fortunately, you've caught the part. You're in the medical system. We can medicate you and test you up the wazoo. Yeah. They say, these chronic diseases are not diseases per se, but merely descriptions of symptoms or laboratory abnormalities. Conventional care is focused on managing symptoms of disease, e.g. hypertension, abnormal blood glucose level, but underlying causes are rarely identified.
Mm-hmm.
They say the functional medicine model of care provides an operating system that works to reverse illness, promote health, and optimize function by addressing underlying causes, symptoms, and functional imbalances in interconnected biological networks.
Yep.
So
getting to
the root cause. So these imbalances may impair principal biologic functions,
mm-hmm.
Assimilation and digestion, defense and repair, energy production, biotransformation, communication, transport, and structural integrity that result from gene environment interactions, including lifestyle, environmental toxins, and the microbiome.
Yes.
Blah, 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 blah. You know, so this is sort of like what they're saying. So, now, here's another criticism. You could say, mm-hmm. well, you know, the people who go to these functional medicine clinics, they're more affluent, they're more educated, they're more upscale. And generally, those people are healthier anyway. So, it's sort of a self-selected group. You know, it's like the unwashed multitude go to primary care.
I disagree.
Well, the study actually disproved that because the people who went to the functional medicine clinic, they tried to match them for characteristics.
Yes.
And actually found that they made, on average, $12,000 less than people who went to regular primary care.
Wow.
So you can't say that these were just the effete, you know,
exactly.
Whole food shoppers, you know, kind of
right.
type people.
These are also the patients who have not been, not just mismanaged in mainstream medicine didn't know what else to do with them.
Right.
That's how ill they are,
mm-hmm.
with no cause, because mainstream medicine is not looking for a cause.
We call
They're
them,
looking for a prescription.
We call
to
them
take
the walking wounded.
Right.
But this also does not preclude people with bona fide serious diseases, like we treat patients with ulcerative colitis
yes.
and Crohn's disease,
mm-hmm.
and people who've had heart attacks, and people with full-blown diabetes.
Autoimmune diseases.
Autoimmune disorders
Absolutely.
Galore.
Yeah.
You know, so in an effort to deal with these, we do provide them with symptomatic relief if they need like a, you know, something to ameliorate their symptoms. Mm-hmm. But we also say, well, how did you get there? You know, we ask that fundamental question.
Why are you having this symptom?
Yeah. What is, so anyway, you know, we could go on and on, and I think I'll write more about this exciting study. But, you know, I think we're seeing a real emergence of, you know, it's exciting because, you know, my career, part of my thrust now is to sort of create a legacy, of, you know, what we've been trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm in the back nine of my career, continue to see patients, but I think also it's important that we leverage our experience to create a cadre of doctors and systems that can continue to deliver this care.
Yes.
And it's great that under the auspices of the prestigious Cleveland Clinic, you now can get functional medicine care. And maybe, you know, as a result of that, maybe some of the other big hospital systems, you know, Mayo and Harvard and Johns Hopkins will say, hey, you know, it's no longer so woo-woo. We can do this.
Exactly. It's in JAMA. Read about it, everybody.
Yeah. You know, it's skeptical clinicians. I mean, there still will be a small percentage of doctors who say, wow, JAMA's really gone downhill. Now they're endorsing quackery. There will be some doctors who will say that.
And,
you know, I've debated some of those people because they think that anything that smacks of holism or functional medicine, they think that that's all not scientifically grounded medicine, you know, because it's not in the orthodoxy.
Right.
But it is partaking of the orthodoxy because we, you know, that's what we talk about here in this program, and that's what I discuss in my radio program, is peer-reviewed studies that validate what we are talking about. It's, we don't just make it up.
No, you don't just make it up, and you have to be able to pluck the good research from the bad research methodology and so forth.
Well, let's get going on questions, all right?
Yeah. So we have, let's see here. I don't have, all right, this comes from Kent. I just finished reading the recent article, fish oil supplements are good. No, worthless. Wait, they work. I always find the articles interesting, but I must say I got little out of this article. I'm an advanced degree biochemist and longtime pharma employee.
I'm very flattered by the fact that he finds it interesting, because if I can you know, speak to that constituency, that's great. I'm not just preaching to the choir, because here's some people who might come from, you know, skeptical scientific background.
Right. So Kent is a biochemist and longtime pharma employee, and also a taker of Vascepa.
Okay,
which is the
prescription fish oil.
I find no conclusions or really any clear opinion in this article. What is the point?
Okay, so I think he may have missed the point, you know, I will respectfully say, because what I was saying in that article basically is that there's this kind of paradox, is on the one hand, all this fish oil research until recently, until one article, which I referred to, which is kind of a conclusive big meta-analysis, most of them said, you know, fish oil doesn't really help that much, doesn't help the heart, you know, studies are not supportive of fish oil, and it was sort of the fashion to poo-poo fish oil. In fact, Journal of the American Medical Association published an editorial saying, the final nail in the coffin for fish oil, which is a pretty lurid headline for a medical journal. Like, the tone of that headline is kind of disparaging, I would say. And then there was the advent of Vascepa, which is a purified EPA, you know, made to exacting standards to just deliver EPA with no other ingredients, no DHA, very high dose EPA standardized. And they found there was a resounding 25 or 30% reduction in cardiovascular disease risk by taking four capsules a day of Vascepa. So that sort of set the standard. Then, you know, fish oil companies started saying, well, you know, how could that be? Because, you know, we've been talking about this for years. Now along comes Vascepa, and Vascepa is so good, and our fish oil is worthless. So Vascepa started sending, I mean, the company Amarin started sending warning letters to the fish oil company saying, this is our intellectual property. We've proven that our product really works. You've not met the standard of proof with your products. So you can't just draft on our intellectual mm-hmm. property and say, don't take Vascepa, just take our fish oil because ours is validated, yours is not. Mm-hmm. But then along comes a big meta-analysis which says that indeed fish oil is beneficial.
Yes.
I believe in the meta-analysis the effect wasn't as robust as with Vascepa for cardiovascular protection.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of this guy listening to this podcast. Am I answering his question? That what I'm saying simply is, you know, if you want, you can take Vascepa, knock yourself out for cardiovascular protection. If your doctor will prescribe it, if you have a copay, so that doesn't cost an astronomical amount, because I think
right.
it's very expensive without insurance coverage.
Right, so like but 400 if, or 600 a month?
But yeah. you cannot tell people who've been taking fish oil all these years that it's been a waste of time or that they've been diluting themselves.
Exactly.
That over-the-counter fish oil has benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can say, you know, maybe one of the reasons for some of the other studies not showing such dramatic results is people taking one capsule a day of fish oil, you know, not enough, or they were using a bad placebo like olive oil.
Right.
You know, olive
right.
oil.
And that's notorious in the scientific research. They're never using the correct dosage of the supplement that they are so-called studying.
Right.
I really question if they're studying it at all or just going through the motions sometimes.
And you know what's interesting too? In the Vascepa, the validating study on Vascepa, they used mineral oil as the placebo. Well, mineral oil is not good for you. And mineral oil actually made
unless you're constipated.
It made right exactly,
yeah.
But it may deplete you of certain things. So
yeah.
They used a placebo that may have actually accentuated the benefits of Vascepa.
Wow.
I wonder if they'd use an olive oil placebo of four capsules of highly
yeah.
polyphenol-rich olive oil if they would have seen such a discrepancy between the placebo and the mm-hmm. Active ingredient, which is EPA. It may mm-hmm. have been that it would have blunted the apparent efficacy of the EPA. But anyway, you know, I think give them credit. The Vascepa people have done a very
yeah.
extensive and expensive study. They've invested in it. They can now promote their product as being preventive of cardiovascular disease. I will say this is the other thing I was said in the article is you can't discount the importance of DHA.
Yes.
In a mixed fish oil product,
mm-hmm.
because DHA has a lot of benefits for the eyes, for the brain,
mm-hmm.
You know, possibly for the heart in different ways. And, you know, so
right.
when
right.
you're using a quote, more natural fish oil product, you may get, it may be less efficacious, but it also, there may be advantages.
Yes.
So,
that's the point.
Am I hedging?
Kent?
I mean, my point is, it's like if you want, like, fish oil versus Vascepa, which is better? I'm not going to go out and say that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that may be the frustration for this
right,
listener
right,
or
right.
reader because
yeah.
I didn't...
Reader decide.
Right.
You put all the evidence out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Like a good investigative journalist.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess people want like an open and shut case. Like, okay, news I can use. What do you...
Right, right.
You know,
what should I take? Okay. Kent, thank you for that. Let's see here. We've got an email from Dan. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. My dad has glaucoma in both of his eyes. One eye is 90% severe and the other eye is in better shape. He's been taking CBD plus CBD oil the past few months for his anxiety, depression. We all believe it's been working out great. He recently had a neurological ophthalmologist visit as well as his glaucoma specialist. They both told him he should stop taking CBD oil
okay.
as it increases eye pressure.
Right.
I listened to his seminar recently where it seemed that CBD helped glaucoma. Any help understanding the conflicting message?
Well, okay, so apparently
yeah.
there was a mouse study.
Yes.
And the mouse study showed what, Layla?
What they showed was they use they tested an eye drop in rats that contained CBD oil.
Wait, eye drop?
An eye drop.
We never said put it in your eyes.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what the study did? The study
yeah.
did not look at oral CBD?
No.
Oh.
These are researchers from Indiana tested an eye drop in rats that contained CBD.
Rats.
Or do they mean eye dropper and they gave it to them orally? I wonder if there's a... misinterpretation here. Okay. A component
okay.
of cannabis that doesn't make you high.
Right.
They found it raised pressure inside the eyes by 18% for at least 4 hours after the drops were instilled. So drops.
In the eyes.
They won't say in the eyes. They say drops. I wonder if they gave it orally.
It sounds like
but
drops
were instilled.
Instilled.
Instilled meaning in the eye.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. They also tested CBD's more famous cannabinoid cousin, THC, the stuff that gets you high. Eye drops containing only THC decreased eye pressure by up to 30% within 8 hours.
Well, we know that this is actually a phenomenon that was noted a long time ago, which
yeah.
is that ganja-smoking Rastafarians,
right.
who are basically genetically identical to African Americans in America, in the United States, who
yeah.
are highly prone to glaucoma, it was virtually unknown among the Rastafarians. Dark-skinned individuals, you know, from the same geographic origin, you know, in Africa, just went to different places. Some ended up in, you know, plantations in the United States, and others ended up in Jamaica. And
I credit Bob Marley with reduction in glaucoma, reduction in your eye pressure.
They're very uniquely protected against glaucoma.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thought was maybe there's something in marijuana or ganja, which is I guess a different subspecies. I don't know. That is protective, and it turns out that THC is protective and lowers intraocular pressure.
Yeah.
But now caution is that CBD mm-hmm. may, and I underline may, be worse for intraocular pressure. But if it's on the basis of this study, first of all, it's in rats.
Yeah.
And yeah. you know, I don't know if that can completely indict CBD. A study has found that CBD, a major chemical component of marijuana, appears to increase pressure inside the eye of mice. In mice.
Mice,
well, this is another study, maybe. This is different.
Okay.
Research
this
in mice.
In rats.
This is in rats.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't. The study was reported December 14th, 2018, mm-hmm. in the journal Investigated Ophthalmology. CBD caused an increase in pressure inside the eye for 4 hours after use. Sounds like the same study, 4 hours after use.
Yeah. Well, the American Academy of Ophthalmology and the American Glaucoma Society don't support its use because they say, while it's true that smoking marijuana can reduce pressure inside the eye, it remains a suboptimal treatment because people with glaucoma require 24-hour pressure control
Fine.
To prevent vision loss. You would need to smoke marijuana 8 to 10 times a day every day.
Okay.
A regimen that would make it difficult to hold down a job or drive. Not to mention the potential cost. But Dr. Hopman, you know what else is interesting?
But this is, I'm looking at the same study. And here they say mice, but it says topically applied THC and CBD. So how does that speak to the experience of oral CBD?
That's
that doesn't really do that. It doesn't.
No.
So I can't really say, you know, this, first of all, I know how people think. And it's like everybody's going to think that now if they take CBD, they're going to get glaucoma based on this.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Because it's like, I'm fine now, but it's going to raise my intraocular pressure, so I can't take CBD. But that's it. First of all, it's in mice or in rats.
In rats,
know. Yeah. And it was topically, it was drops of CBD.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would say, okay, fine. If you've got glaucoma, maybe you should not take CBD. But maybe you should, because it is anti-inflammatory. It kind of makes sense that it might be helpful. I think the word is not out on CBD safety in people with glaucoma. But you know, in the precautionary principle is we see some signals that it may raise intraocular pressure as opposed to THC, which lowers intraocular pressure. So, I think we need to do more work on this.
Exactly. And you know what? There's another interesting little difference here. Researchers also found that THC and CBD affected eye pressure differently in male and female rats. Males who received THC had a much larger drop in their eye pressure, suggesting there are sex differences in how the compound acts on the brain.
Wow.
Must be the female rat's pesky hormones. Oh, my goodness. Well, that's very interesting. That's very interesting. So, all right.
You know, I think here's, this is a, and I'm reading some advice from an eye specialist, from an ophthalmologist, and he says, so the best answer I can give you is that it's hard to say. I've not read anything to suggest that CBD oil will alter the effectiveness of your glaucoma medication, but I don't think it's unreasonable to try it. If you do find that CBD is useful for stress and anxiety, then I would carefully follow you for several months to determine if usage is accompanied by deleterious effects under your intraocular pressure. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way to play it.
That's,
it's like,
reasonable.
You know, if you're getting a benefit from CBD and you say, hey, this guy is getting a benefit,
yeah.
right? I mean,
yeah.
obviously,
yeah.
for what? Again, for sleep, for anxiety?
For anxiety, yeah.
So, mm-hmm. so
anxiety and
so follow, it's easy to get your eye pressure checked. Check to see if it's worsening the eye pressure.
Yeah.
It, you know, I think we're going to have to gain experience with that. But
yeah.
I think what I would do with my patients going forward is if they're using CBD. But I would not say that there's some sort of hard and fast rule against using CBD if you have glaucoma at
right.
this point.
Okay.
Because it's sort of weak evidence.
Yeah.
Like. In yeah. a different species, topically applied.
Yeah.
No,
which is,
we never
which
tell
is
people to squirt CBD
that,
in
that
their eyes.
That delivery has, there has to be a,
yeah.
there has to be an impact of that.
Yeah.
Or a lack thereof.
Yeah.
Depending on how it's administered.
All right. We are reaching the end of our time limit for part one.
Mm-hmm.
But give us a preview, Layla, of what we'll be talking about in part two.
I find that if I don't eat before my morning workouts, I don't feel as strong and I feel a little weak.
Oh, back to that question of should you eat before a workout. Let's focus on that in part two of today's Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin. It's our Intelligent Medicine Podcast.